silver-haired man in his 50s.
All right. That's me, the actor, Mark Bonner. Not acting, obviously. That's because this is a documentary about Scotland's new towns. Actually, it's about art in Scotland's new towns. And I'm not talking bronze statues of dead blokes on horses, you know, like proper art. No, new town art was different.
Sculptures of hippos and toadstools.
Why me? Well, my dad Stan, that's him, was a new town artist back in the 70s when that was a thing. The new towns would have a guy in charge of drainage, someone in charge of roads. They'd also have someone whose job it was to make art for the town. And my dad was one of them. So I know the new towns. I grew up in more than one.
It's for Dad. I just keep telling myself it's for Dad. It's for Dad. I am a documentary presenter. I am a documentary presenter. Confident, assured, knowledgeable. Confident, assured, knowledgeable. Confident, assured, knowledgeable. There you go. CAC. Let's go.
The thing is, I've never presented a documentary before. If I was a proper documentary presenter, you know the type, I bet this is how we'd start.
Hippo me. Me hippo. These wonderful water horses were made in 1973 by Stanley Bonner, town artist. I was made in 1968 by Stan Bonner, student. So in a sense, we're related. Hello, brother. Join me on a journey. Not just a journey through the hippos, through the elephants and through town art of the 60s and 70s and 80s in Scotland, new towns. But a quest where a son looks for his father. But not only looks for his father, but looks for his father's legacy and what that legacy means and where it's going. And where it's been. Join me.
BBC Scotland. Meet you at the hippos.
The idea of new towns providing better conditions for what politicians now call hard-working families had been developed at the turn of the 20th century by people with brilliant names, like Ebenezer Howard. Slum conditions in dirty, crowded industrial cities would be swapped for space, clean air, and a new way of living.
In Scotland, the story of the new towns begins with the designation of East Kilbride in 1947.
The people had just come through a war, and this was their reward from the government. In Scotland, there are five new towns. This man will now helpfully and slowly point them out for you.
East Kilbride, to Glenrothes, Cumbernauld, Livingston and Irvine.
Thank you. Conditions, particularly in the east end of Glasgow, were horrendous, so the idea was to ship people out to where they had more space.
New towns provide a markedly different background in which children can grow up.
I was one of those children, not that one. Building a new town was an enormous undertaking. Houses, factories, because people need jobs, schools, roads, sewers, electricity. Just take a second to let that sink in. How do you turn a whole load of fields into a town?
I want to see new towns gay and bright, with plenty of theatres, concert halls and meeting places. Our new towns must be beautiful. Here is a grand chance for the revival or creation of a new architecture. Beautiful.
Beauty maybe isn't what springs to the modern mind when thinking about the new towns of Scotland. But in the late 60s, these places were filled with energy, optimism, and art was part of that. The new town artists filled these neighbourhoods with work. There's loads of it. So I thought, let's do every interview beside a piece of Newtown street art. It was probably my only good idea.
Mark's perched on the bumper of a hatchback with the boot open, checking his phone.
Oh, God, I bet Alan Yentop doesn't have things like this where he's running off and checking what he's got to fucking ask. What was it like to move here 20... Oh, no, that's not ours. How do new towns fit into the broad political and social history of Scotland? How am I going to ask that like I know what I'm talking about? For sake. OK.
Thankfully, historian Dr. Valerie Wright knows what she's talking about. Go sit on some concrete mushrooms and have a chat. How hard can that be?
So my first question is, how did the new towns fit into the broad political and social history of Scotland, right? You want me to do that on top of a mushroom?
Well, what about these two? Don't know if this is going to work. I'm going on a wee one.
Right. How did the new towns fit into the broad social and political history of... I'm not doing this. So, Val, how do the new towns fit into the broad social and political history of Scotland?
Oh, that's a big question. I mean...
That's why I asked.
I think, like, when you're thinking about how the new towns have contributed to Scotland's economy and society and culture, you need to think about the context in which they were created in the post-war years, where there was really big social problems to be sort of dealt with by the national government and the Scottish Office. So there was mass sort of overcrowding in Glasgow. 500,000 people would need to be moved out of Glasgow. So they had to create new places and spaces and jobs for those people to go to.
What was the population at the time?
I think it was just under 1 million.
Just half?
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't imagine Scotland now without the new towns and without that sort of grand planning that went on. They were really utopian in their vision and how big solutions to big problems. I think you've got to kind of admire that drive, but at the same time causes quite a lot of upheaval. What they were doing, in the 40s, 50s, 60s was thinking about building communities. You're thinking about people as communities, as groups of people who will socialise together, go to church together, shop together, take their kids to playgroup together, you know, try to encourage people to look out for each other and get to know each other.
Tell you what, we'll start in Glenrothes. It was supposed to be a town built around a super pit, the Rothes Colliery, which the Queen opened in 1957. But just 8 years later, the mine was closed due to uncontrollable flooding. Disaster. But this was the 60s, remember? People didn't just lie down and give up. So, rather than slide into decline, Glenrothes Development Corporation attracted these new electronics companies to the town. And Glenrothes was back in business.
So... Right, so what? Where'd you...
In 1968, it became the first new town anywhere in the world to advertise for a town artist. And the man who was to become the world's first town artist was... not my dad. It was, in fact, a lovely guy called David Harling. This is one of his finest works in Glenrothes, a concrete beauty based on an old Celtic spiral. He named it Henge.
It's an astonishing transformation. Astonishing. I mean, all these trees here were just thin saplings. It was bare. So this rather stood out, you know. And now it seems to kind of nestle in this wonderful arbour. I don't know what moved me to see it as a kind of clarion call to the heroes and heroines of my own at that time, all key characters, beginning with the greatest footballer ever, Pelé here, and the Beatles, Bob Dylan, Che Guevara, with the bullet holes. I mean, Che there was 1967. So he had just died. One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovic had just been published, the book. It's grasping at all these fascinating things of the late 60s. But really, the keystone is the biggest column, which is the one to Gandhi. man's best monument is not a thing of stone, but consists in living deeds and the memory of which lives in the minds of those he served. So in a way, it's negating this as a timeless stone or concrete memorial. All passes, you know, everything changes. The memories that you have embedded in others will be what will remain. I decided that I would, with the family, you know, get a council house in the town. I got a nice big studio where the direct labour works were. So the plumbers, the bricklayers, carpenters, wanting to identify with the people building the town. So it was important to me, very important.
I think it's a credit to Glenrothes to be far-seeing in that they've employed someone like myself to join the team involved in developing the environment for people to live in. When, you know, people come round this corner and they're confronted by these things, that I think their imaginations are stimulated. The materials that have been used are always the materials of the site itself. I think this is important. It's part of the housing, and yet different.
There was no attempt to make the grand statement in the way that public art is so often meant to be. No plinths. There will be no plinths in Glenrothes.
A field of barley stretching to the horizon. Then, a man's walking through the knee-high crop, his hand caressing the sheaves of wheat as he goes. He's silver-haired, bearded, and in his 70s.
Hello. I'm Stan Bonner, Mark's dad. Did you think I was dead? Well, I assure you I'm not. This isn't the afterlife. It's actually just a barley field behind my house.
Call it serendipity, but David Harding came along in my final year at college and asked me to go and work with him in Glenrothes. He'd already been working outside, using concrete, working with people, for people. And I think what took David about my work was that I was also already working outside. I was on my own quest, as it turns out, to discover the meaning of environment and of art, of time and space, that make these things up and how they're all connected.
We moved into the house that came with the job, and I made my first Glenrothes artwork. 5 concrete hippos walking round a new town corner. They're still there, old friends I haven't seen in a long time.
This is 40 years, I think, since I've been here, 38 years since I've been here. Are you telling me which way to go? Is it long that way? Oh, it's, tell me. Okay. Oh, dear, dear. Oh, dear, dear, dear. Oh, shit. Bless you, you know, that's full of memories, man.
Huh. He strokes one of the 5 stone hippos.
I feel they look good. I like the way that they've gone dark. I tell you what they've done. They've taken the colour of Glenrothes skies on. There you are, see? Glenrothes sky.
Do you feel proud when you see them?
I think... No, I don't feel proud. It's a kind of euphoria. I did them first. They started me off on a philosophical journey which has lasted my whole life. And somehow I'm coming round a corner here and they're speaking back to me. Well, goodbye. It's actually au revoir. Au revoir. See you again. See you newly. See you fresh. Wow.
Mark?
Hi, Dad.
So much to talk to you about. Meet you at the hippos?
Aye. Okay, well, maybe once I know a bit more. Like in the last 10 minutes of the documentary?
Ah, all right. You might want to go to Cumbernauld next. Brian Miller started the whole thing off over there.
Yeah, I know. We're just a bit... Look, whose documentary is this anyway?
Oh, right. Yes, sorry. You're doing a great job, by the way. Your mum and I are very proud of you.
Right. So, Cumbernauld. Speak to people nowadays, and a lot of them hate Cumbernauld. They're snobby about the architecture. In fact, they give it awards for how crap it is.
Judges of the contest, which allows people to vote over the internet, branded the town centre soulless and inaccessible. Well, our arts correspondent, Pauline McLean, is there. Pauline.
It was also described as being like a rabbit warren on stilts, like a scene from the film Armageddon, and like Eastern Europe before the wall came down.
But you know what? Cumbernauld used to be cool. Back in 1967, the Institute of American Architects acclaimed it as the world's best new town. Planners and architects from around the globe were all a-quiver about its revolutionary hilltop design and a variety of award-winning housing stock. Housing stock.
The planners conceived the town. The people are giving it personality.
Archive film of people in the 60s dancing. Then Mark trying to copy their swaying moves. The footage shows men and women in a nightclub, and Mark's impersonation becomes more extravagant, throwing his arms around, hopping and undulating his hips. As Mark, who's standing outside by some flats, continues his 60s moves, he eventually wears himself out and bends over, catching his breath.
That guy's a total fanny. Cumbernauld was also an innovator when it came to town art. In the mid-60s, Brian Miller had become the Development Corporation's unofficial town artist. The sculptures and murals he put up around the town inspired local kid Neville Ray to follow his own path and end up at art school. He's taken me to see one of Brian's works, the Carbrain Totem.
Oh, wow. I didn't realise it was in between two roads as well.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. You come up close to it, isn't it?
Yeah. Brian Miller's most famous and iconic artwork in Cumbernauld, and one of the only few remaining, actually. Brian shared an office with architects and structural engineers and civil engineers and draftsmen, and they were having a big meeting about developing this area and building this bridge, and the engineers had realised they'd over-ordered the amount of concrete that was coming that day, and Brian kind of overheard this conversation in this open plan office and said, well, that sounds like maybe a perfect place for a piece of sculpture. Why don't I try and come up with an idea for that? The only issue being that this was a Monday and the concrete was coming on the Friday. And that kind of symbolises a lot of that kind of new town attitude. Lo and behold, Brian worked through the night making this kind of elaborate mould. The concrete came on the Friday and Brian was up a ladder. The builders helped cast the bridge, also cast the totem as well. And there was a real kind of collaboration and democracy, you know, that everyone was kind of chipping in to kind of make this town.
That's part of the joy of it, isn't it? That sort of democratisation of everything. You know, it's not seen as an elitist form of working. It's just part of...
Hang on.
Just wait for this guy to go past.
There's a guy wearing a coat with the hood up, covering his face, who's on a walkway behind them. He crouches down at the ground to do something and then walks off.
Fuck's that about? Weird. What was I saying? Thanks, mate. Totally lost my train of thought. It's pretty... incredible that in amongst building a whole new town, with everything that goes along with that, the infrastructure and the, you know, utilities, and that they kind of thought, let's throw art at it as well.
And to employ the town artist as a civil servant, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and who brought his family and had children and, you know, integrated himself into the community was so groundbreaking. Brian didn't go to art school either, you know, he never had any formal education. He was just a creative draftsman that was into comics and sci-fi and hustled himself into the role of town artist and kind of forced himself into that job.
I would say that I'm a fanatic
about Cumbernauld. The whole sort of scene, as you may say, has something which I find quite vibrant and full of fascination.
He invited me round for a cup of tea. He pulled out all these old photographs and, you know, it just, my whole world kind of opened up. That I was like, I couldn't believe I was meeting this person that had this huge archive of work that no one knew anything about.
Because it had all gone.
A lot of it had gone, yeah. There's 54 underpasses in Cumbernauld and he painted every one of them with a mural.
Sadly, only two of those 54 murals now remain, and most of Brian Miller's other work has gone too. But thankfully, the Carbrain Totem is still standing. Not bad going for something Brian knocked up in a few days because someone had ordered too much concrete.
What do you think of the variety of names that people have been giving this piece?
I think this is the correct approach one's got to make towards abstract sculpture.
So what is it to you, in very simple language? Can you give it a name?
Well, you see, it would mean different things to me. You know, you've got to think of it as a sort of personal thing for the people within this particular area.
What do you think of that?
Give me 3 days to think about it.
Okay.
No, I like these bits.
These bits?
Aye. They look like kind of Pictish.
Ah.
Don't know, you know.
So you've been walking past this for 50 years?
Aye. It's no bad, you know. But, I used to have a medical condition. I was addicted to stone circles for 4 years. I can't talk anymore, you know. You know, I might become rich and famous and Woody Adey. Any part, you know.
Cheers, Ollie. Brilliant.
I've come back to Glen Rothes to find out more about what the town artists were trying to achieve. What was their philosophy? I'm back at the Henge to meet a guy writing a PhD on the subject, a man with a brilliant moustache and an even better name, Andrew Demetrius.
Here's a big question for you, Andrew. What is environmental art?
Environmental art is perhaps best thought of in contrast to art that we think of in museums and galleries. It's not just the fact that it's outside. It differs from historical public art in that it's not on a plinth, it's not a monument. It's often down on the ground level, integrated into the surrounding landscape. It's art you can touch, it's art you can climb on, all the things you're not supposed to do in galleries. It's art that responds to its environment. The artist John Latham had an expression, the context is half the work. And as soon as you hear those words, you look at the artwork and you look at the world around it and you think about the relationship between the two of them.
What can you tell me about my dad, other than the stuff I already know?
Well, Stan was the first of David Harding's assistants. David set it up almost as an apprenticeship. And so he gave these graduates the opportunity to work alongside him in the communities, learning the ropes. He gave them the space to develop their own ideas. Although the town artists were winging it to some extent, they didn't have a materials budget, so they were reliant on being pals with the engineers, the concrete engineers and so forth.
Oh, Andrew's really clever. I bet he's coming across great.
Wish I could think of something profound to say. Come on, you doofus. Anything. Anything.
expand.
Hello?
Andrew Demetrius, what is art?
Well, if you look at the...
Sorry. Before you answer, can I just interrupt you? Because what this, circle of concrete does is imbue, nay, instill a sense of humanity.
Yes, well...
If I could just stop you there, Andrew. Because although I appreciate that you've worked on this for a while, but I think what's important is my experience in this place and what I'm getting. It's not really about what this is, it's about me.
As we pass by...
Andrew, can I just interrupt you there? Because there's something happening. There's something happening to me at this moment in time which is akin to the quickening. It's quite overwhelming. Wait, please, before you... We need to sit and listen. Birds. Trees. Grass. Sun. I'm not finished. Move away. I am here.
Mark snaps out of his academic persona.
The work that David Harding and his team were doing in Glenrothes was making waves all over the world, but especially in other Scottish new towns. So, when East Kilbride decided they wanted a town artist of their own, guess who got the job?
I remember driving up one of the main boulevards in East Kilbride in my little new car, a Volkswagen Beetle. And I was looking around and I said, I'm going to do my best for you. And I had this vision that I was going to do my best for the people of East Kilbride. What am I going to do? I'm going to carry on from these hippos in Glenrothes. And so I thought, OK, I'm going to make an elephant. The last time I was here was in 1976. Dear Lord.
He approaches the small herd of stone elephants.
Oh, hey! Right. Okay. I know why. I see them now and I know why they broke. I should have thought that the trunks needed to be a wee bit stronger, so that people, if they wanted to, they could jump up and down on them. But I made them a bit too thin, so I'm awful sorry about that. I wonder where all the bits of the broken trunk are. The trunks are now really creating part of this little bit of East Kilbride, because the trunks aren't on the elephants anymore. The trunks are actually in the undergrowth. They're forming part of the ground of those bushes over there, I think. And they've become really part of East Kilbride. They're recreating East Kilbride in a way. I would say that East Kilbride and the elephants now have a really good understanding, because the trunks have got broken. If the trunks hadn't got broken, maybe it is the case that they wouldn't be such a good artwork now. Or a work of recreativity, as I call it. The whole place, the whole of this environment is now part of an artwork. It's a thing. That's an object. I'm an object. But this is a thing.
During my time at East Kilbride, they unveiled a plan to build another new town just 10 miles away, around the existing village of Stonehouse.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
For the villagers, it was a mix of fear and excitement. Stonehouse Newtown would be huge.
Area lies between Stonehouse Village to the north, Blackwood Village to the south, the motorway and the western boundary.
6 secondary schools, a train station, swimming pool, 70,000 more human beings. And I was to be its town artist. For me, Stonehouse was a blank canvas, a chance to turn my theories about time and space into art.
If Stonehouse gets the go-ahead, these green fields will be the site of the new town centre. And this lane will become a major thoroughfare, as bustling and metropolitan as East Kilbride. And the first 96 houses are being completed, ready for the first new towners to move in after Easter.
That was us, Mark. Do you remember?
I do, Dad. I do.
This is Murray Drive, where I used to stay. And that's my old house there. Is this going to start becoming like famous people crying in libraries?
I didn't know I was related to Queen Margaret. I had a wee chipper bike.
Let's go see what's round back. Follow me. Man, I hate documents. Don't you hate documentaries? They're rubbish, isn't they? Good God. That's my bedroom. Oh, no. Yeah, that was my bedroom first. I shared that with my brother. We had bunk beds. It's amazing that it's still like this, actually. I mean, if the new town had gone ahead, this wouldn't be here. There would have been houses as far as you could see.
It never happened. Just 2 days after the hullabaloo of an opening ceremony, Stonehouse Newtown was cancelled. To this day, it remains a village. But it's a village with some Stanbonner elephants. Like their cousins in East Kilbride, they're beginning to look their age. But the villagers have got a crowdfunder going, and they're now being restored by local artist Ray McCulloch.
All right.
Hiya.
How you doing?
Not bad, how are you?
I'm all right, huh? Yeah. Looks like you're hard at work.
We are, yeah.
Sorry, Ray, hang on, we'll just wait for this.
The same guy with the hood of his coat up creeping past, staring at a sheet of crumpled paper.
All kinds of Stonehouse, eh?
What is going on?
Can we go? Yeah. I'll just go back to...
We're repairing some elephants. Ah. So we've got Yvonne here fixing the trunk.
Chicken wire. Brute strength.
Are you from Stonehouse?
I am, yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, just across the fields, actually. I grew up in Stonehouse and some good memories from coming down here and playing in the elephants myself.
What do you think everybody feels about these elephants? What's the community's view of them, kind of thing?
You really get the sense of pride of having these here.
Yeah.
The sense of that community feeling.
Oh, yeah, of
course. Just don't break them.
Just don't break them, yeah.
Don't break them. I'm not coming out to fix them again.
Oh, the beautiful elephants. Almost like living stone. Livingston. I've done a link. In the early 70s, wanting in on the town artist action, Livingston advertised for one. Step forward the swashbuckling young Dennis Barnes.
When Livingston New Town appointed Dennis Barnes as its official town artist, it gave him this old builder's yard as a base, along with a fistful of problems. How to produce useful, amusing town art with a zero budget.
Hello, Dennis.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I recognise you from your films, Mr. Hunter.
Right, Dennis, take control. Where are you going to take me?
We're going just round the corner to the main sort of pedestrian walkway in Nelson Avenue. Okay. And there's a totemic sculpture there that we made in, I think, 1976.
This sculpture is intended as a kind of community totem.
The philosophy is simply that people could say to their friends, if you get off at the bus stop near the big totem pole, my house is sort of next door to it.
That was one of the first things that I did. And it reminds me of my interest in the Mayas and the Incas and so on. So I made a big rectangular mould, roughly the size of that, in my studio. Polystyrene carvings fitted inside, with steel in it with a hook at the end so they could actually lift it up and put it in a hole after it was finished. And that was it ready. So it's not complicated.
Yeah.
So it's a great affection to see it, because I made it.
Yeah, I know.
And it worked, and it's still here.
It's still here, yeah. It's fantastic.
This is another small courtyard in the Howden area where we've used the brick mural technique again. And in this one, we've used two different colours of brick, bringing out some of the brick in relief, and the kids can use it as a climbing wall.
As time progressed, you were given staff and a budget.
The HR manager said, look, there's a new thing from the government called the Job Creation Programme, and basically what it is, you have to be doing things in the community for the benefit of the community. And he said, what you're doing fits into it great. Absolutely perfect match. So in 2 days, we put the application together and got a phone call the next week and said it's been approved. And that was the first job creation programme in Scotland.
Oh, wow.
And I got 20 approved posts out of that.
20?
Aye.
So did you have any people working for you, or did it go from you to 20?
Yes.
Wow.
Literally.
Dennis has a team of willing youngsters recruited under the job creation scheme, and they have to use free materials like these old trees or fabric that's already paid for, like the actual bricks and mortar, timber and tarmac of the new town.
Archive film of youngsters smoothing and sanding the sculptures.
God, they all look about 12. Anyway, there you go. Not only did Newtown artists bring a bit of joy and humour to repetitive rows of identical houses, they even created jobs. Dennis may have had to hustle for a budget, but it didn't stop him filling Livingston with work. Sometimes funny, sometimes colourful, and sometimes surprisingly practical.
Oh, wow, there they are. Gosh! The old men ahoy. Can you tell me about these amazing sculptures?
The principal reason they're there is because when there's heavy rain, there's a 2 metre bore of water comes out of here. And it was felt that that bore would actually endanger the riverbed where salmon had previously been. So my brief was really simple. Make something that breaks up the bore, doesn't destroy the salmon, potential salmon breeding grounds. So I made up a very simple balsa wood model of the idea of it, the five standing pillars, and gave it to the hydrological engineers. We tested it, and they came back and told me the best way to position it, to break up the water flow.
Where did the how did they get the concrete down?
We pumped it from up here.
Oh, from the bridge?
From the bridge, yeah. We managed to build this for nothing. They always overestimate, and that's why you can always find concrete in a new town when it's getting built. So 2 years after we actually finished that, they found salmon were breeding again.
That's incredible, isn't it? Wow, that's really rewarding.
That makes it worthwhile.
Oh, I bet it does.
It would be nice if somebody could tidy up all the landscaping around about so people could see. They're lost now, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
West Lothian Council, who are now responsible for Livingston, have a public art officer, Camille Archer. Her job is not only to commission new artworks, but also to preserve the existing collection, including these sheep from the 70s.
Camille.
Hello.
Sorry to keep you waiting. By the sheep.
Not at all. Welcome.
None of them have got their noses left.
Yeah, that's true. Rub the nose for luck. Like the Buddha.
Oh, right. Extensive play and
yes,
rubbing.
Exactly. I might rephrase that.
What's the point in kind of restoring these wee shabby old sheep?
Oh. It's worth preserving them because they are artworks, and we, as a society, preserve our artworks as best we can. Because they were here from the beginning of the new town build, I think they represent some of that thinking of getting different people together into a new place and giving them an opportunity to play, be positive and enjoy the environment. And I do think people's children still want to play on them. So, there's no way we're not restoring these.
Camille, what do you think the point of public art is?
How I personally think about public art is that it's touching on an ancient human tradition, right? It's not, when you look around at all cultures all around the world, people create art, you know, and, you know, if it's Stonehenge or if it's, you know, I don't know, any of the other monumental communal artworks that were obviously meant for a community to experience, you know, this is just the contemporary iteration of that. With a public art project that is kind of homegrown, the artist comes in to try to experience something in that community and then brings the community along with them in that design creative process. And that's what it's for, because we're reflecting back to each other what we, how we feel about our environment.
Oh, Camille's good. I should pick that idea up and run with it somehow.
Art. 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 Anybody. Art.
Fart. Way out west in Irvine, the fifth and final new town, they were doing a similar thing a bit differently, with artists in residence, like Mary Bourne.
Hello, Mary.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Could you tell us a wee bit about how you came to be here in the first place?
Yes, well, the Development Corporation advertised their artist-in-residence post when I left college, which I applied for and didn't get, but the person who did get it then dropped out. Uh-huh. And so by default, I ended up here extremely green and inexperienced, I'm afraid, but in the deep end.
What year was that?
1987. It was slightly different here in that, unlike Glenrothes, where it was like an ongoing permanent post funded by the Development Corporation, mine was a residency funded by the Arts Council. So it was a slightly different model. And I think the Development Corporation was just winding down. I think I was maybe the second last artist in residence, something like that.
And this is yours?
This is mine, which is a bit strange seeing. The stone has eroded. It does make you feel really quite old. It used to be out on the end there, on the end of the spit, and that was really fantastic because it had the sea around it and it looked pretty stunning. But then the sea lifted it right up and then swept it right along.
Goodness.
So it's all about the sea and the power of the sea.
Yes, the sea decided otherwise.
I suppose at art school we were pretty much taught to make things that sat on plinths in galleries.
Yeah.
And it always seemed to me like that just kind of missed a big bit of the point, which is, you know, it's you and the people sort of communicating through the artwork. While I was here, I was doing really a lot of community engagement work. So I had children's classes and adults' classes and schools projects, and my house and studio were in the same building. There was the primary school in front of me, the sheltered housing behind me, which was really lovely because they sort of adopted me. And I remember them posting little bits of frozen fish through the fence so that I could have something nice for my tea and things like that.
There's no such thing really as a town artist anymore anywhere. Do you think that's a loss?
I do. I think continuity and the ability to do something and then build on it and build on the relationships that you've established, I think that is a real loss. Finding ways for artists to work in the places that they live is something I would absolutely say is a way to go.
A little boat's bobbing on the rough sea.
If ever there was a warning, hewn in stone, it was for that situation there.
Should I go to Walsers? Come on, let's go to Walsers. Come on, Singer, we're going to the Walsers!
He walks over to a nearby fairground.
In 1978, David Harding left his pioneering post as town artist for Glenrothes.
So smart.
I know, it's really embarrassing, isn't it?
But the commitment to groundbreaking public art in Fife continued, with Malcolm Robertson taking the job.
Can't cross there.
You could probably, there's a gap in the fence. There you are, the same.
It's one of your more accessible works.
It is.
Giant flowers.
My first day here, a memo lands on the desk for the Glasgow Garden Festival. All the five new towns in Scotland were getting the opportunity to do a flower display. Each of the tram stops would be for one of the new towns. And they would read about the new town, all the opportunities, all the building that was being done. And so it was a showcase. And so the memo landed on the landscape architect's desk, and he looked at it and he thought, I don't want to make a pretty flower garden. I want to do something interesting. I'm hiding behind a bush at this time in the office. And I go, oh, what would you like me to do? Someone said, how about some giant flowers? And I said, yeah, I could make giant flowers. Then someone else said, how are you going to make a giant flower? I said, trust me, I'm an artist. So we took them through to Glasgow. We planted them at the Garden Festival. They got really popular.
Many of the plants that grow wild across Scottish mainland were once exotic strangers from across the world. Not these irises, they're from Glenrothes.
Then when we brought them back here, when the Garden Festival was finished, there was a building site nearby, on the other side of the trees here. Someone stole the heavy plant crossing sign. And they stuck it here. So that heavy plant crossing sign was here for months. All flowers have symbolisms, and the iris is a symbol of hope and optimism. And of course, the idea was, come to Glenrothes, big ideas. Your big ideas can grow in Glenrothes. So, you know, we're all into the marketing, and of course, the artists got drawn into that as well.
Yeah.
Hey-ho.
Many of Malcolm's artworks have been moved so they can be seen from cars to help sell the town.
Hello, Linda.
Hello there, Mark.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Linda Ballingall's job with the Glenrothes Development Corporation was to bring people into the town, and the art became one of her most potent weapons.
I joined the Development Corporation in 1983 as its tourism development officer, and my job was to create awareness of the town. And during that, we used the hippos and the rest of the town art on a huge basis for marketing.
Oh.
We had all sorts of things happening in the town, and that was to attract visitors into the town, and it was very successful.
I mean, you've got probably the most first-hand experience of how the community feel about the artworks in Glenrothes.
The art means a great deal to the people of Glenrothes because, in part, it gave Glenrothes an identity. What's always been said about Glenrothes, because it's a new town, that it had no roots, it had no identity. And the town artists helped change that perception. This chap here, he's called the Dead Hippo. I can't imagine why the Dead Hippo, because there is nothing more alive in Glenrothes than the hippos. And there was very mixed feelings when the toadstools started to get painted and spots put on them and the hippos started to appear with Wellington boots and all the rest of it.
Was that a council-sanctioned thing?
Yes.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Right, OK.
Yeah. The people that have a pride in the town art, they weren't too keen about it, but it went ahead anyway.
It's a mark of how passionately some Glenrothes residents feel about their public artworks that when the council started altering and moving them, they went straight to their then MSP, Tricia Marwick. She's taken me to one of the artworks she's helped to protect, an underpass by David Harding.
Wow.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's absolutely beautiful, yeah.
This is industry. This is one of our C-listed artworks in Glenrothes.
Gosh, that's a lot of work.
Isn't it amazing?
So you were part of the process that helped or enabled the listing to happen, isn't that right, Tricia?
Yeah. I mean, I've been passionate about Glenrothes artwork ever since I came to the new town in 1975 and then had my kids, and we used to go and find the hippos and we went down to town park. So then I became an MSP and things worked well up until 2009-10 when Fife Council was fixated on moving the artworks from their places. So much so they were sending diggers in early in the morning, removed some of the artwork and placed them on roundabouts, painted them. The Disneyfication, shall we say, of our artwork. And it was a disgrace.
Do you know what the thinking behind it was?
Yeah. It was to make the artwork more prominent and better known. That was what the council's justification for it was.
Mm.
In actual fact, it was for the kids who lived there.
Mm.
It wasn't to sit on a roundabout where the kids could never clamber upon them.
Yeah.
What they've done is that they've valued the collection by moving it from place.
Yeah. Context is 50% of the work.
So I had a word with the minister, Historic Environment Scotland, because no artworks had ever been listed before. It was for buildings, it wasn't for art. Mm. Eventually, they agreed to list four of them. You know, this is a first for Glenrothes and first for public art,
yeah,
that we have got listings, and I hope more will follow.
These artworks will probably keep being moved and repainted. Sometimes that means they get seen by more people. It's a tribute, I suppose. The listings by Historic Environment Scotland are a tribute too. The Newtown artists wanted to talk for their communities through the art. Five decades on, these communities are finding ways to protect and restore the work because people love these lumps of concrete. That is the legacy. Anyway, it's time to go and talk with the old man. Meet you at the Hippo's, Dad.
I'm here, Mark. I've always been here.
He's the guy creeping around with his hood up. In a dreamlike sequence, he carries a small folding table and places it by the stone hippos and sets some things down on it, which include a paper cup, some foil, and a glass bottle. He stands waiting by the hippos. Then as Mark walks over to join him, he lies down on the ground. Mark approaches him.
Dad?
I understand the rain.
You all right?
Oh, Mark.
What are you doing? Oh, you all right?
Oh, my goodness me. I was just thinking about stuff, Mark.
Mind your knees.
Oh, my God.
God's sake. What are you doing down there? Communing with the hippos.
I was actually communicating with that fag butt.
OK. Sit down.
I was saying, but it's not semantics. It's not semantics. It's actually real because there is a thing called the quantum paradox.
Can I stop you?
Uh-huh.
And just take you back a couple of steps?
Okay.
You can't just dive in with quantum paradoxes and expect
to
go,
mm-hmm.
Because I don't know what the F and Jeff and you're talking about.
Okay.
First of all,
okay.
This was your the first thing you made as a town artist, is that right?
That's right. The hippos, yes. I dreamt. There was a noise in the front garden, pulled the curtains back and looked out the window and there was a hippo eating the flowers in the front garden. All right, now, look, it's a moment of beauty. Thinking about moments of beauty, what are you going to be able to do to still say the same things that you want to say, only in a way that children want to play with? And that is this, the hippo. If people start to use a different way of thinking and speaking about things, then we're going to start to make some sort of progress away from commodification of objects and start to thinking more about how we belong to the things around us, how we are them. We are them. At a deep level, we are them. That's what quantum entanglement says. We are a singularity. There might be a space between you and me in reality, but that's only reality. What is actually happening is that you and I are... we don't take up any space at all. We are one.
OK.
Do you recognise any of these things?
Maybe vaguely, yeah. Oh, that was you!
That was me. Look.
Oh, in disguise. So what was that all about then?
I was doing some cat sitting for Vincent, your brother, as you know.
I knew that. I've heard his name.
You've heard him, right, OK. There's me washing the dishes. I'm putting stuff in there for recycling, and I'm standing with a bottle top in my hand. I think that everybody, instead of putting their recycling in the bin, make something much more of it. Have a little altar in your house, because it is an altar. It's an altar if I say it's an altar.
All right.
OK. And arranging it in such a way until that moment of beauty where the whole thing just seemed perfect. There it is. Perfect.
And the point of that?
And the point of that is that in that moment of beauty, if quantum is not a paradox, if we are a singularity, I've actually used it to recreate myself in a way. You, me, the lamppost, they are all deeply, deeply connected. They have an understanding with each other.
To my mind, a lamppost doesn't understand a concrete hippo.
Right.
So what are you saying there?
Well,
what does that mean?
I mean, first of all, how do you know? I want to sign a hippo. I'm inviting you to help me, so I want to sign it with a symbol for understanding. And then you...
So I go like that. Is that it?
That's exactly right.
He's drawn small wavy lines on one of the hippos.
Looks like too much hard work. Mind your hip.
Okay.
Thank you. Right.
If you try and just take your time and it'll go well.
Mark draws a line across the one his dad's drawn.
It looks... Oh, no, it does look green.
Hey.
Yeah?
Hey.
Something must have rubbed off in
that's
the
absolutely...
past 52 years.
Thank you.
Understanding.
Thank you.
Standing under. Stan.
Two stone armchairs in front of a concrete TV.
Well,
I remember these.
Do you?
Well, I remember one.
It's crazy.
Shall
crazy
we?
To see these. My goodness me, after so many years. Oh, dear.
Should we see what's on?
I think so.
I think we should.
I think so.
As our journey draws to a close, what have you learned about public art?
I have learned many things. That art isn't just about pedestals. It isn't just about...
Dick.
Mark's dad's pretended to have nodded off in the chair.
Is it time to put more leaves in the television yet?
Almost.